The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's has ranked Edelman Financial Services as the number one independent advisory firm in the nation based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investor returns and experience are not considered. Edelman combined with Financial Engines Advisors in November 2018.
This is the Rick Edelman Show. Edelman Financial Engines is the number one ranked investment advisor in the country by Barron's. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
And a very happy weekend to you. Welcome to the Rick Edelman Show. We're in the middle of August, and you might be a little bit nervous right now if you've been paying any attention to the stock market. Yeah, you've seen the volatility this week, haven't you? Down and up and 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 down. One day the market is up hundreds of points. The next day the market is down hundreds of points. What is going on? That's what everybody's trying to figure out. In addition to the tariff wars, which are on again and off again, and in addition to missile launches that are on again and off again, and missile silos apparently blowing up in Russia, we don't know whether the global economy is going to be growing or going to be shrinking. We're not sure what's happening. What we do know for certain is that it's been 10 years since we've had a recession in the United States. Now, just to put that into context, we typically have one on average about every 4 years. It's been 10 years since we've had one. And the general attitude is the longer you go without one, the more inevitable you get closer to one. And so people are beginning to wonder what's going on. And then there's the August thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but over the past 10 years, every year, August has been the worst month.
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
Yeah, since 2009... August has lost, on average, 0.75% in the S&P 500. It's the worst performing month over the last 10 years. And a big reason is that for, I don't know why, but tumultuous events, weird things have happened in the Augusts of the last 10 years. And so that's giving people some additional pause of saying, oh my goodness, here we are in August. And if August is always a lousy month, does that mean I ought to be selling? Well, let's just try to get a grip, first of all, okay? First of all, okay, over the last 10 years, August has been a bad month. The worst, in fact, of all the months. But wait a minute. That's just over the last 10 years. Let's go over the last 50 years. August isn't the worst month over the past 50 years. It's the third worst month over the last 50 years. September's worse. Uh-oh. September, that's what's coming after August. June is actually worse than August. We've already gone through June. You didn't notice, did you? In other words, we really don't have to worry about it. I'll give you another number just to demonstrate to you that we can always play with math if we want. Since 1926, in a year when the stock market was up through July, and that's this year because we're up very strongly through July, whenever that has happened since 1926, the market's average return for the rest of the year is a 4% gain. So we're up through July of this year, and that suggests that the market can be expected to be up for the rest of the year. Now, do you really give any credence to any of that? I don't, because who cares? First of all, it's an average. And we all know what they say about averages. You got, you know, half of them are above it and half of them are below it. So first of all, I don't even know if the average means anything. And second of all, it's only an average. What we need to be asking ourselves is, okay, great. Let's assume that the stock market craters in the next couple of weeks through the end of August. Let's ask you a simple question. What are you going to do about it? In fact, let's take it a step further. Let's say you know for certain that the stock market's going to crater in the next couple of weeks. Would you sell right now in anticipation of that? Get out before the market crashes? Well, let me ask you this question. Why would you be focusing on the next 2 weeks? What does that have to do with anything? Are you in a financial situation where you're planning, regardless, forget about the market, forget about the economy, are you planning to withdraw your money on September 1 Do you have a big bill coming up? Do you have maybe a tuition bill you got to pay, or you're planning to buy a house, or you're going to start a business, or there's a heart operation that your mom needs and you're about to write a big fat check? Do you have intention of spending the money September 1? Oh, you don't? Oh, well, when are you going to be spending the money? This is a serious question. I'm not making this up. We're not having a cavalier conversation here. This is serious stuff. When are you planning to begin spending the money that you have in your accounts? If your answer is not for many years, then what difference does the next 2 weeks make? And that's kind of the point, isn't it? Because when the media talks about the historical returns of August, or the average annual returns since 1926, or fears of a coming recession, even though there's no evidence of one at the moment, they're taking your eye off the ball. It's easy to fret what might happen tomorrow. It's easy to get upset about losses that occurred yesterday. But that's not really what matters. It's not what the markets are going to do when the markets fall. The question is, what happens after that? Of course, we need to remember the past performance doesn't guarantee future returns, but still, I want to go back into history.
Hello out there, Peabody here.
And I'm Mr. Peabody's trusty boy, Sherman.
And now we'll be off for another exciting journey back into history.
Ready, Mr. Peabody?
Get into the Wayback Machine.
So let's go back to the Korean War. When the Korean War started, the S&P 500 fell 15% in 5 weeks. A massive decline as America was very upset after coming out of World War II not all that long ago to find ourselves immersed in yet another war. The stock market fell dramatically in a short period, 15% in 5 weeks. But what happened 6 months later? The stock market was up 31%. A year later, it was up 36%. Okay, you may be saying that's an aberration. Why, Rick, would you go all the way back to the Korean War? Okay, let's go to Sputnik. Stock market fell 10% in 3 weeks upon the news that Russia launched a satellite into orbit. But although it was down 10% in 3 weeks, 6 months later, the market was up 8%. A year later, it was up 30%. How about President Richard Nixon's resignation? The stock market fell 19% in a little over a month. But 6 months later, the market was up 30%. How about the silver crisis? Remember when the Hunt brothers got hauled into Congress because they tried to corner the market in silver? When they tried to pull that stunt, they caused the entire U.S. stock market to fall 12% in a month. But 6 months later, the market was up 26%. How about the crash of 1987? The stock market fell 26% in 3 weeks, a quarter of the value gone in just a matter of weeks. But 6 months later, the market was up 7%. More recently, 9/11. The U.S. stock market fell 12% in 3 weeks in the aftermath of that horrific day. But 6 months later, the stock market was up 7%. How about Hurricane Katrina? The U.S. stock market fell 2% in 6 weeks, but 6 months later it was up 7%. We could go on and on and on. Most recently, the Brexit vote in 2016. The S&P fell 5% in 1 week. 6 months later, the market was up 13% when everybody realized, eh. That's my point to you. It's not that you need to be cavalier. My point is simply to not get fearful. We need to recognize that while major events in the world, political crises, wars, social issues, natural disasters, terrorism, while these can and do have massive disruption, volatility, market losses in the short term, history tells us that over the long term, this too shall pass. In fact, I've got a chart describing all of the data I've just shared with you and a lot more. It's posted on our website at rickedelman.com showing you the performance of the stock market during and after a crisis. I invite you to take a look at this. It's also in my book, The Truth About Money. We've updated it now all the way up to 2016 because that's the most recent time we've had one of these shocks. And it demonstrates for you the fundamental premise even though you may experience volatility in your portfolio, even though you may see market losses at the moment, if you have a long-term time horizon and a properly diversified portfolio, you can just look at these events and say, it's raining outside. I guess I'll wait till it stops. So if somebody is scaring you into thinking that, oh my goodness, should you be changing your investment strategy? Should you be selling investments or buying different ones? Should you be getting out of the market? Should you be putting your money into guaranteed investment opportunities that immunize you against market losses before you fall for those sales pitches, before you revamp your entire investment strategy based on some website or some free lunch seminar or from some sales pitch you get in direct mail, give us a call. Let us take a look at your portfolio. Let us examine what you're doing, help you reevaluate why you're doing it, to conclude whether or not changes, in fact, are necessary. And we may very well help you discover that, you know what? What you're doing is exactly what you ought to be doing, and you ought to just keep on doing it. And if changes do need to be made, as a fee-based, objective, independent advisor, we'll be able to give you advice that's in your best interests. Give us a call at 888-PLAN-REC. My colleagues and I here at Edelman Financial Engines, happy to help you like we've helped so many folks in your neighborhood just like you. We're happy to do it for you as well. That's 888-752-6742. You can visit us online as well at ricedelman.com.
More with the author of the 2008 Personal Finance Book of the Year, The Lies About Money, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In 3 decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage, it's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are 2 pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
She's the first lady of rock and soul, Patti LaBelle, live. Patti LaBelle with special guest, the Pointer Sisters.
I'm so excited.
September 8th, Tulalip Amphitheater. Reserve seats on sale now at the venue box office and Ticketmaster.com. Don't miss Patti LaBelle with the Pointer Sisters.
Here in the Northwest, we see all the elements. Get your home ready with a new roof from Acton's Quality Roofing, offering GAF Timberline Armor Shield roofing shingles, unmatched for wind uplift resistance, fire safety, and durability. Every shingle comes with the Good Housekeeping Seal and the GAF Golden Pledge Warranty, 20-year workmanship, 50-year material. And right now, you can save $500 on a new roof. Find out more at actonsroofing.com, A-C-H-T-E-N-S roofing.com, or call 1-800-ROOFTOP.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. I want to ask you a question. Do investors differ based on their ethnic backgrounds? Do white investors behave differently from Hispanic ones, black ones, Asian ones? No, according to a survey from Spectrum Group, everybody's got the same primary goals and the same concerns. The biggest concerns, political environment, government gridlock, and the stock market. Those concerns sound familiar to you? According to their survey, 83% of all investors are worried about today's political environment. And if you want to look at it on a per race basis, 84% of whites are worried about it, 81% of Hispanics, 82% of African Americans, and 75% of Asians. Pretty much everybody equally worried about today's political environment. How about government gridlock? Overall, 73% of us are worried about this. And the breakdown by race, 74, 73, 73, 64. Pretty much the same. How about national debt? 72% overall are worried about our national debt. The breakdown, 74, 63, 61, 67. Not a lot of difference. How about cyber attacks and computer hacking? 67% overall are worried about it. Individually, by race, 68, 65, 63, and 70. You see the point? Everybody is pretty equally worried about everything overall, including the stock market. 64% of Americans are worried about the stock market, and break it down by race, it's 63% of whites, 75% of Hispanics, 64% of blacks, and 69% of Asians. Everybody everywhere, pretty much equally. We're not seeing 80% on one scale and 20% on another. Everybody is within a pretty narrow band of attitude about all of this. And that is a demonstration that maybe, just maybe, our nation isn't so divisive after all. Maybe, just maybe, we all do have similar views of what is of a concern to us and our aspirations for the future as well. Think about that the next time somebody suggests to you how different we are when, in fact, we're really very much alike. I want to shift gears here now on the Rick Edelman Show, and we talked earlier in this program about the importance of maintaining a long-term perspective, giving your money the time it needs to take advantage of the power of compounding, which you can't do if you're constantly shifting your money around, moving it in and out of the market, trying to avoid market declines such as the kinds of days we've seen this past week in a desperate effort to have your account only rise and never fall. Well, I want to share with you the experience and the lesson learned by someone who, in fact, did fully appreciate the true power of compounding. I want to share with you the story of the last will and testament of Benjamin Franklin. Now, of course, we all know Ben Franklin. He's widely remembered as one of the most influential founders of our nation, a respected inventor, publisher, scientist, and diplomat. He helped draft the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. He negotiated the Treaty of Paris that ended the Revolutionary War against Great Britain. Ben Franklin published Poor Richard's Almanac. He created America's first library. He helped form the American Philosophical Society, which was the first scientific society in the colonies. He was also the founder of the University of Pennsylvania. Franklin invented bifocals, the Franklin stove, the armonica. That was a musical instrument that Beethoven and Mozart wrote music for. He invented the rocking chair. Did you know that? He invented the flexible catheter, the lightning rod. He even invented the penny. Ben Franklin was our first Postmaster General, the first U.S. ambassador to France. By the time he died, April 17th, 1790, Ben Franklin was one of the wealthiest men in the United States. In his will, he bequeathed 1,000 pounds sterling to each of the cities of Boston and Philadelphia. That was about $119,000 in today's dollars. And he had the following instructions in his will. Much of the money was to remain untouched for 100 years, and the rest of it untouched for 200 years. Here's what Franklin said in his will. He wanted the money to be lent at 5% annual interest to help apprentices under the age of 25 start businesses. He calculated, quote, if this plan is executed and succeeds as projected without interruption for 100 years, the sum will then be 131,000 pounds. Today's dollars, about 16 million bucks. The managers of each city, he wrote, after 100 years, would be permitted to spend 100,000 pounds, about $12 million, in public works. The remaining money, about $3.7 million, would be continued to be loaned at 5% interest for another 100 years, and at which point it would be worth about $450 million. At that time, he wrote in his will, $126 million was to be distributed to the inhabitants of Boston and Philadelphia. The rest, about $350 million, to the governments of those two states for their use as they wished. In the 100 years after Franklin's death, hundreds of young entrepreneurs got loans as he requested. Carpenters, bakers, shoemakers, tailors, painters, printers, cabinet makers, clockmakers, bookbinders, blacksmiths. But, as often happens in government, officials in both cities raided the trusts during those 10 decades. Philadelphia, they used the money to pay public debts. In Boston, they financed construction projects. Still, both of the trusts kept growing, and by 1890, 100 years later, the Philadelphia Trust was worth a little over $3 million. Boston's about $12 million. At that time, Boston used the remainder of the money that was available for distribution to create the Benjamin Franklin Institute of Technology. It was opened in 1908, and since then, tens of thousands of students have graduated with degrees in the fields Franklin had encouraged. In Philadelphia, meanwhile, the bulk of the distribution went to the Franklin Institute, which was founded in 1824. Today, the Franklin Institute is one of the most popular tourist attractions in the country. In 1990, the two trusts were then terminated. It was the 200-year mark. Boston ended up giving another $4.5 million to the Benjamin Franklin Institute of Technology, and the Philadelphia Franklin Institute got $2 million. No one, before or since, has ever set aside money to be untouched for 100 years or 200 years. The power of compounding over such long periods allowed a small amount of capital, 119 grand, to become more than 22 million, with another 10 million in loans to entrepreneurs over two centuries. Had city officials not raided the money, the trusts would have grown to nearly half a billion dollars, exactly as Franklin calculated in his will. By the way, here's a footnote. It's worth noting that Franklin projected that the trusts would grow at a 5% annual rate because that was the rate he was charging for the loans to these young entrepreneurs. If the $3.7 million, you know, that's the money that was created in the first 100 years, if that money had then been invested in the second 100 years into the U.S. stock market, earning 10% a year, which is what the stock market has done in the last 100 years, instead of accumulating half a billion dollars, it would have been worth $51 billion. That is the power of truly long-term investing, and only Ben Franklin was smart enough to do it. We could all stand to learn from Benjamin Franklin, long-term investing, effective rates of return, that's the key. Let us help you do that here at Edelman Financial Engines. 888-PLAN-RICK online at ricestellman.com.
Named by Talkers Magazine as one of the Heavy 100 talk show hosts in America, this is The Rick Edelman Show.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In three decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage, it's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are two pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricestellman.com. Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In three decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard, and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And, well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage, it's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are two pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Patti LaBelle, live. Bell with special guest, the Pointer Sisters.
I'm so excited.
September 8th, Tulalip Amphitheater.
Nothing pairs with a good cocktail like great friends. Join Lydia Cruz and Justin Steeple every Saturday at 3 for Cast Club Radio.
Presented by Heritage Distilling.
Exploring the intersection of cocktail, spirits, beer, wine, and life. Saturday at 3 on Cairo Radio.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. It's fascinating to me. We've been having so much conversation, not only on today's program, the last week's as well. And you're hearing it in the news all the time, and it's understandable why, regarding the decrease in the stock market. We're seeing incredible volatility on a daily basis as everybody's trying to figure out what's going to happen next. Is the economy going to go into a recession or not, even though at the moment there's no evidence of it? And what's fascinating to me is everybody's watching the decline periodically in stock prices. What you're not really paying attention to, I fear, is the decline in interest rates. That's what you really ought to be looking at. The 30-year fixed rate for a mortgage is now 3.6%. This is amazing. Back in November, almost a year ago, it was 5%. Let me just help you understand the impact of this. A 1 percentage point decrease in rates translates into an 8% increase in the number of homes that are sold, according to the National Association of Realtors. Because the lower the interest rates go, the cheaper the mortgages become. Let me put it to you this way. Let's say you're shopping for a house and your budget says you can afford $2,000 a month in monthly mortgage payments. When the rate's 5%, like it was last November, that translates into a mortgage of about $370,000. And that's the price of the house you can afford to buy. That's the size of a mortgage you can afford to get. But when the rate goes from 5 to 4, the mortgage balance can rise from $370,000 to $420,000. All of a sudden, you can now afford a house that is $50,000 more than just several months ago on the same monthly payment. That's why it's so exciting. This is why the Mortgage Bankers Association says that loans being used to buy houses are rising 6% this year. And refinancing volume's the key. I know you're saying to yourself, well, I'm not planning on buying a house, Rick, but I'll bet you already own one, and I'll bet you already have a mortgage on it. When is the last time you refinanced? Refinancing volume is expected to rise 16% this year. There are 10 million homeowners who would benefit from refinancing. Are you one of them? You need to talk to us here at Edelman Financial Engines. Let us examine your home situation. What's the value of your house? What's your current mortgage balance? What's the current loan you've got? How long do you plan to stay in the house? Are you planning any improvements or repairs or maintenance to the property? How much equity do you currently have in the property? Let's examine if you could save a couple of $100s a month, maybe even more, by refinancing. 10 million Americans have this opportunity, and many have simply lackadaisically not taken advantage of it.
My parents left me that house.
You're not going to lose the house. Everybody has three mortgages nowadays.
For your information, the interest rate alone for the first 5 years comes to $95,000.
Don't make that mistake. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. Let us examine your homeownership status. Let me change subjects now here real fast on the Rick Edelman Show. We talk often about Social Security and the need to improve America's retirement readiness. So I'm really happy to welcome to the program Jeffrey Sensenbacher. He's with the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, where he's Associate Director of Research. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Rick, thanks so much for having me.
You know, it's so interesting. You're with the Center for Retirement Research, and the word retirement is a huge issue, obviously, on this radio show, being focused on financial planning and financial success. And, you know, when we talk about retirement, it's, I think, very common for people to think of that as a solo activity. But when people are married, it becomes a family affair. And yet, a lot of folks don't regard it that way. So tell me, what are some of the considerations you have found in your work at the Center for Retirement Research that married couples need to be thinking about when it comes to saving for retirement?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, today in a lot of couples, both members of the couple are working. And I think one of the things that is really important to remember is that when you're saving for retirement, what you're really saving for is so that when you retire and stop working, you don't experience some big hit to your standard of living. You want to retire and you stop earning your income, and you want to keep going out to restaurants and going on vacations and doing all the fun things you were doing while you were working. And so, and hopefully more of them. And so, to do that, you're really replacing both people in the couple's earnings. And that means you have more money to save, but it means you have to save more. And so one of the things that couples really need to think about, okay, if both of us are working, that we actually need to have more money saved up than we would have otherwise so that we can maintain that higher standard of living we're enjoying because we're both working once we retire.
And what did you find? You spent a lot of time analyzing couple savings patterns. What did you find?
Yeah, so what we did is we looked at couples where both people were working. What we did was we compared couples where both people had access to a 401k, and then we looked at couples where only one of the people had access to a 401k. And what we found out was that when only one person had access to a 401k, that person basically acted like they were just alone, like they didn't have to save more for their spouse that wasn't saving. And so when we looked at households where both people were saving, we found they were saving somewhere between 9% and 10% of their household's income. So they were saving quite a bit of money, and they were probably going to be in good shape for retirement. When we looked at households where only one person had a 401k, we saw they were only saving about 4% to 5% of their household's total income, and that's just not enough. And so, essentially, people were just acting like individuals no matter what they were doing. So as long as both people had a 401k, they were fine. But if only one of them did, they didn't save enough to actually make up for that difference. And so, people just act like individuals no matter what. And so if one of them doesn't have a 401k, then they're in trouble.
So that's a real problem. When you're married or when you've got a partner, you've got to act like it. We're in this together.
Act like it. Yeah, people don't. I mean, this is something we see in the 401k space all the time. People just kind of do the default, right? They don't change their contributions very much. They don't react to things very often. They just kind of keep doing whatever it is they're doing. And so when you have a spouse that's making money, that doesn't really work. You've got to change what you're doing to recognize the fact that you've got to replace their income.
Let me take a wild guess here. If it's true that married people aren't doing double work, meaning that they should both be saving for retirement, or if one of them has a retirement plan, that one needs to be doing double duty, saving for retirement.
Yeah.
If that's not happening, yeah, I'm going to guess that it's the married women rather than the married men who are worse off.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and one of the reasons for that is just that, you know, married women, they live longer, right? And so they're going to be dependent on the savings for a longer period of time. And so, yeah, in the end, they're the ones that are likely to suffer a little bit more for it. And we do see this. We see that widows have fairly high rates of poverty relative to when they are married. And so you do see this, that women kind of are the ones that end up suffering a little bit more for it. And the other really strange thing you see is that, you know, we think that, of course, married couples are going to be, they're going to tend to have more income than single women. So married women, of course, have more income than single women. But when it comes to retirement time, we do see that married women look a little bit less prepared for retirement than their single counterparts. So, you know, they have more income while they're working, but they're less likely to be able to maintain their standard of living when they retire. And so that's a real problem.
And so the message here is that if you're a married woman, you need to make sure that your spouse is doing what is necessary to protect you, because you're the one who's more likely to be the survivor.
Yeah, if you're a married woman and if you're not saving through a 401k, you need to make sure that your husband is saving not just what he would save if he was on his own, but recognizing that you're making money and that savings needs to go for both of you. And that's true of a married male, too, who doesn't have a 401k. I mean, if your spouse has a 401k, then he needs to make sure that she's saving double. But more often it is the woman, and it's going to affect the woman more.
So, Jeffrey, what can we do to encourage couples to save more money for their retirement?
I think on the couple side, it's always important to communicate, as any good marriage counselor will tell you. And so I think on a couple's individual side, just talking and saying, okay, do you have a 401k at work, or how much are you saving for it? You know, and is it an amount a lot? It needs to be higher than 10% because, you know, if one spouse isn't saving, the 10% for the individual is more like 5% for the household. And so the first thing is just asking about that contribution rate and recognizing, look, if it sound, even though 10% sounds high, it's not 10% of the household's income. It's only 10% of that person's income. And so getting them to save a bit more would be good. I think in society, and for employers especially, recognizing that the features that they lay out in the retirement plans can help make this easier for couples. Doing things like auto-escalation obviously makes contribution rates higher for everybody, but that can also help couples deal with this. A lot of times employers will know if a person's married or not based on their allowances, and they may be able to say something, you know, have you thought about increasing your contribution amount if your spouse isn't saving, things like that. So I think on the employer side, it's really, can they use the information they have to talk to their employees, and can they, importantly, I think, can they design their 401k in a way that makes sure contributions are as high as they can be for everybody?
That's terrific information. Thanks so much for sharing it. You've got a lot going on at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston University. There's always a lot of great research coming out of the center. What's next that you're working on?
Yeah, one thing I'm working on right now is actually there are programs in states like Oregon, Illinois, that are trying to expand retirement savings vehicles to more low-income workers. They're called auto IRAs. And one of the great things about these is that they're automatic for workers, and they cover workers whose employers don't offer a retirement plan. And so these are a great way to make sure that fewer couples have the problem we're talking about. The whole reason you have two earning couples where only one person's savings is because not everyone has a 401k. And so programs like these that help workers save easier also make sure fewer and fewer couples have this problem. In other words, make sure that more couples have both people saving. And so we're researching how all these programs are working, where they're falling short, where they can be better. And that's something that we think is really important because it expands coverage and makes sure that couples don't have this problem and that no one has this problem of not saving enough. And so that's one thing that we're working on that we really think is important.
That's great info. Look forward to hearing the results of your research when you come up with it.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, Eric, thanks so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
So there you hear it. If you are working, you need to make sure that you're saving for your retirement in your 401k if you've got one. And if you're married and you don't have a retirement plan where you work, you need to make sure your spouse is doubly contributing to their retirement plan at their work. Need help with all this? Well, give us a call, 888-PLAN-RICK, or visit us online at rickedelman.com.
Author of the number one national bestseller, The Truth About Retirement Plans and IRAs, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Are you an overthinker? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show right here every weekend. In 3 decades of serving folks like you here at Edelman Financial Engines, we've met a lot of folks who were trapped because they were overthinking their financial decisions. We get it. This can be scary stuff. You work really hard, and you make a lot of sacrifices to save all your money. And, well, just imagine if you make a mistake. Bad investment choices, the wrong mortgage, incorrect insurance coverage. It's enough to keep anyone awake at night. So here are 2 pieces of advice to help you solve the problem. First, realize that most decisions can be changed. And second, it's not just you, it's we. You don't have to go it alone. Let us help you. You'll get our experience and our expertise. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines. It's one decision you don't have to overthink. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Do you know Laura Keel? Laura is one of the only 144 people nationwide who's achieved the designation Certified Reverse Mortgage Professional. If you have questions about a reverse mortgage, learn from Laura. Attend the upcoming complimentary lunch and learn at Keel Mortgage Wednesday, August 21st in Kent. Have your questions answered by a professional dedicated to the highest standards. Laura Keel, 1-888-778-KIEL or keelmortgage.com. Mortgage Master Service Corporation, CL 40445, Equal Housing Opportunity.
It's Rachel Bell, and gotta love an open house. So you can see the largest selection of all new 2019 Chevrolets. New models, new looks. And of course, big savings. Up to $5,100 on Chevy Equinox SUVs, up to $7,100 off Silverado 2500 HDs, and up to 20% off Silverado Double Cab LTs. Find your roads on River Road. Visit ChevroletOfPuyallup.com or the No Stress Way on Evergreen Way, ChevroletOfEverett.com. Price plus tax license and $150 negotiable dock fee.
Thinking about updating your shower or bathtub or converting your tub into a new shower? Your timing is perfect because right now Bathfitter is having our biggest sale of the year. Pick your style, color, and fixtures, and Bathfitter will do the rest in as little as 1 day. And for a limited time, save 12% off your complete tub or shower project. Schedule your free in-home consultation today at bathfitternorthwest.com or 800-NEW-BATH.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. We invite you to send me your questions. You can just send them an email to askrick@rickedelman.com. You can write your question down, or you can record your audio voice and send your audio. That's what Cheryl did. Here's what she asked.
Hi, Rick. My name is Cheryl, and I'm 41 years old, living in Newport Beach, California. I just finished my professional degree 5 years ago. I have $400,000 of student loan debt left out of the original $480,000. I refinanced to a rate of 5.5%, down from 6.5% a few months ago. My question is whether I should treat my student loan as a mortgage and just pay the minimum payment of $3,400 a month for the next 15 years, or try to pay it down quicker. I paid $51,000 last year in loan interest. I made $130,000 in gross pay and contributed $5,200 into my SEP. Please help.
Wow. I've heard of a lot of stories and encountered a lot of clients who have student loan debt, but this one, Cheryl, might set the record, $480,000 in student loan debt. And in the last 5 years, you've paid off $80,000 of it, leaving you with a current balance of $400,000. You've done the right thing so far by lowering the interest rate as best you can from 6.5% to 5.5%. The numbers are staggering, as everyone has heard. You're spending $3,400 a month on your student loan debt, and you're facing the prospect of having to do that every month for the next 15 years. You said that your annual income is $130,000. If we reduce that by a third, then we're looking at a take-home pay of about $90,000. And of the $90,000, you're sending about $40,000 off to student loan payments, nearly half of your take-home pay. It's making everybody wonder how you're able to afford the rest of your lifestyle. How are you able to afford housing payments, transportation costs, healthcare costs, food, clothing, et cetera, et cetera? I would hope that you are married or have a partner who has an income as well to help deal with that, or otherwise you are clearly facing yourself on an austerity program. And I would also hope that you anticipated all of this when you pursued the degrees that led to the student loan debt you accumulated. I hope you were aware that you were going to be earning about $130,000 on an indebtedness of $500,000 to be able to anticipate this and be, with full disclosure, willing to live the kind of lifestyle that this all requires. But it is, unfortunately, all in the past, and we can't do a whole lot about it at this stage. So all we can do is deal with the question you asked, which is, do you merely make the minimum monthly payment required, or do you accelerate those payments in an effort to get rid of the loan faster? Well, you're paying an interest rate of 5.5%. That is a low rate, which is really terrific. So I am not very concerned about seeing you pay that loan off any faster than you are required to pay. If it takes 15 more years, so be it. And here's the reason I say that. You did say that you placed several thousand dollars of savings into a SEP account, which suggests to me that you're self-employed. A SEP IRA is for self-employed individuals. And the good news is you got a tax deduction for your contribution. And if you've invested the money into the stock market, historically, the stock market earns 10% a year. Now, I really shouldn't say that as a present tense. I should say it as a past tense. Since 1926, the stock market has averaged 10% a year. Nobody knows if it will continue to earn 10% per year going forward. I personally have no reason to believe that it isn't going to do that over the next 100 years like it has for the past 100 years. Of course, past performance doesn't guarantee any future results, but if that indeed proves true, I'd be happy to invest money earning 10 while borrowing money at a cost of 5. It's a good deal. If you are fearful that your investments won't earn 10%, if you're fearful they won't even earn the 5.5% you're paying for the loan, then you should do everything you can to accelerate the loan payoff. In other words, if you were going to put the money in a bank account earning 2%, no, that wouldn't make any sense. Why would you save money at 2 only to have to spend money at 5? So whether or not you accelerate the student loan payoff is entirely dependent on the rate of return you think you're going to earn on your savings. There's a related element as well, and that's cash reserves. If you do take all of your available money and throw it into the loan payoff, you have no cash. What happens if you suddenly lose your job or lose your income? What if you have a medical issue? What if you have unexpected car repair? What if something happens and you've given all of your available money to the student loan payoff program? You can't go back and tap into that. So I would argue that it doesn't make sense to accelerate these payments any longer than is necessary. Because after all, you never know what's going to happen in life. So keep doing what you're doing is the short answer, and keep figuring out ways to increase your income while controlling your expenses. And I hope everybody else has got a little bit of an eye-opening from all of this. Although your case, Cheryl, is a bit on the extreme side, there are lessons to be learned for everybody here. How much money are you willing to incur in student loan debt? What income can you reasonably expect to earn with the degree that you're obtaining? And is that income going to be sufficient to pay off that student loan debt without crushing your lifestyle or perhaps your health along with it? I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Rick Edelman Show, and it raises the big fundamental question, might you outlive your money, especially while you're in retirement? We want to help you avoid that potential risk, and so we're staging free live events all around the country called 3 Keys to Retirement Planning. And in this live event, you'll learn about Social Security, how to maximize your benefits, estate planning, and investing for retirement to generate the income that you need. We're doing the events in upcoming cities in Columbia, South Carolina, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Baltimore, Grand Rapids, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge. You can get the full seminar schedule at our website at rickedelman.com. Just go to ricedelman.com, click on the live events tab. And there, once you go to the tab, you'll be able to see the full schedule of the cities we're coming to and the dates, and you can register online. We encourage you to do that fast because the hotel rooms where we're booking these events have limited seating. So take advantage of it while you can. Columbia, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Baltimore, Grand Rapids, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge are the upcoming locations. I'll be announcing more to come here on the show. And like I said, you can go to our website at rickedelman.com to get the full listing. And if we can help you in any way, such as avoiding student loan debt in the first place or helping you figure out how to deal with it once you got it, like Cheryl does, call us, 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricedelman.com. That's it for this weekend. Remember, if the stock market's got you in a tizzy, give us a call, 888-PLAN-RICK. Till then, I'll see you next week here on The Rick Edelman Show. I'm out of here. That's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.